Ridge blew up in my face. That's why I'm sniveling. Kaboom. This body is trying hard to do so. Now, there, a man cannot use force without putting out a flow. And you can't put out a flow without exciting the laws of elasticity of flows.
They work.
So he puts out this flow. If he puts out a flow in any direction, he's bound to get it back. This makes reciprocity. Dead X's, overt acts, all sorts of things. Wonderful to behold how wrong a man can get because he hasn't any business living and being a frail, delicate, maladjusted, narrow tolerance band body and still try to employ force. And therefore, but so you'll see him doing all these weird things. You'll see him going out and declaring war and then putting these little frail things called bodies up in front of machine gun bullets. He'd be awfully surprised because he has a population which no longer is able to get along very well. He'll do the fantastic things because his basic impulse is to run on force. And if he were sane at all, he would be using force. Now, force is not the same as violent force. Any energy flow, would, if directed, would be a force. The cult of force is 1-5. Let's all destroy it, cult, as such. But a fellow so withdraws from the savage and wild use of energy that he won't even use a vaguely proper estimation of force. He won't use any kind of force, really. He just back off from force. It never occurs to him when you say force. When you say Fort Maine, when you say all sorts of words regarding that, 90% of the people who hear the word say immediately, oh, that's that. I don't like force. What are they saying it with? They're saying that with force. Force is estimated, directed, channeled energy. Now, that's the definition of force. You don't like force? Well, if you don't like force, that's why doorknobs come off in your hand sometimes, and why you can't open drawers, and why you stumble. And it's just you don't like force. So if you don't like force hard enough, you're going to misuse force. Very simple. You take an athlete, and if this athlete goes long enough under the lines that he's got to practice a certain regimen continually, he's going to get in horrible shape after a while. Why? He's saying that certain forces are bad. As soon as he says certain forces are bad, he's going to throw his whole life out of balance to a point where he can't estimate force. And that's why Joe Lewis eventually loses. Joe Lewis goes around and says the forces of democracy are wrong or something. They fight. These forces are wrong. These forces are wrong. These opponents are wrong. These opponents are wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. And that's force, and that's bad. And that's bad force. And the next thing you know, what do you got? You've got a champion who's no longer champion. Now, it's perfectly all right if he went at it the other way. If he knew he was just producing randomity. For instance, I have a lot of fun with you talking here. A lot of fun with society at large. I talk about Homo sapiens. I'm actually quite fond of Homo sapiens. I'm not in any degree talking about my own opinions when I'm talking about Dianetics. Or even my own conduct. I have a better level of honesty than that. And it's very interesting. I talk about psychiatry, psychology, psychoanalysis. I'll let you in on something. There is no cult or knowledge or worker in the world who did not fight hardest that which most closely approximated his work. You find that there was a Christian, the Christian church. I had a perfectly good church sitting around Rome, and it was talked about life hereafter and immortality. Gee, it was close to Christianity. It was the Church of the Roman Soldier. That was his religion. And boy, Christianity did not rest until it had torn. Why, the pagan gods sat there just for ages. They sat there on their pedestals, and the rites of Rome were observed, and the Vestal Virgins were still employed centuries after the Christians had carefully taken this very Christian-like religion and taken every stone apart from every other stone and destroyed every book and destroyed everything so that hardly anybody knew about this until a tremendous amount of archaeological research revealed it. Because the temples had all been knocked to pieces. The literature was all gone. No mention was ever made of it. You talk about hate. There is no hate like that of brothers. Because you have a similarity. And they have to fight to establish a difference. And therefore, a person fights against an identification. Instinctively. But you actually have to do that a little bit to punch up your point. The fact of the matter is, the actuality is in the world today, I seriously doubt that Sigmund Freud has a defender except me. I really doubt that. Because the world's foremost authorities on Freud write stuff, and if people wrote that about me, I'd come down and give them a swell nip across the ears. They've got his stuff backwards and upside down and misinterpreted and wonderful. The old guy wasn't bad at all. Because he drove home a terrific point. He said something could be done about the human mind. Boy, that was new. Charcot and Mesmer said there are other things that you can do to human beings. And there are many phenomena that need to be investigated. And they did a wonderful job of it and gave us technology. But they didn't implant this general wide idea. Until you find, in the last many years, most doctors will break down and admit there is such a thing as an illness which stems from the mind. Well, this was unheard of, outside of demoniac possession, something of the sort. Unheard of before Freud. And boy, did they hate his guts in his day. He was barely got through medical school. Freud had a bad time. In 1920, the poor old guy wrote a paper called Psychoanalysis Terminable and Interminable. I think that was the name of the paper, something like that. He found out that it didn't work. That broke his heart. He turned up his toes. That was the end of it. He's now a streetcar conductor, or motorman, or violinist, or someplace now. But let's take hypnotism. Actually, I have no violence against hypnotism. I wouldn't hypnotize anybody for two excellent reasons. Reason one, it's very aberrating to the operator. Reason two, it's very hard to dig up out of the subject. But as a research tool, if I thought I could gain any knowledge by going into hypnotism again, die. Why did I fight hypnotism so hard in the first book? Well, naturally, we were doing something too close to what hypnotists did. And people could actually get it confused. So you had to get in there and fight to show them there was a difference. You had to make an awful uproar to show people there was a difference between these two things. And to this day, I imagine, you take this, there's a fellow in the United States named Alabama Joe or something like that. Alabama Jim. He's the head of the Alphabetic Foundation. He's a former hypnotist. And he has the most wonderful time. And we pitched him out of an operation much earlier, and he's never been able to get over it. He can't practice Dianetics straight, of course, because he's mad at Dianetics. But he can't help but practice Dianetics. You take another guy that really did some very interesting work. He combined some Hindu work with some hypnotism, and he had a great lot of fun. He picked up a clue or two and developed some things. If he hadn't been working so hard to defend what he was doing, he would have developed a great deal more than what he did. But this fellow used to put out the most vile arguments about me. Just vile. The vitriol would just eat through the paper. And that was circulated to a great many people. Well, I don't know. There was never anything definite like Hubbard Eats Babies. That was too definite and positive. It was just that we don't agree, and we know nobody else agrees, with Hubbard's ethical stands. That couldn't be, isn't it? Of course, he had to battle for his life. His first impulse was to get directly in touch with me and give me this work, and he ran into the secretary of the First Foundation, and the work didn't get through to me. And he revolted from this and started practicing on his own, and then he got the idea without ever having any communication line. Everybody was dead against him, but he had to fight. There's no hatred like that amongst brothers. When you see hatred smoking up like that, remember something. It's normally brothers. And sometimes you'll get a vast shock when you interfere between two brothers. Have you ever see a man and a woman fighting on a street? Walk the other way. They might be husband and wife, and he might be ruining her, and she might be on the verge of throwing him under the lorry wheels and so forth. Leave them alone. Because if you touch either of them, the chances are pretty good they'd both turn around and tear your hair and pull your throat out. It's unaccountable, isn't it? Man employs force, then, of this character, but he wishes definitely and desperately to differentiate his force. Now, I therefore don't dare say too much in favor of something or recommend something, because a difference will break down. But what I think myself, and what my own philosophy of existence is, and what I talk about as basic science of the mind, happen to be two different things. They're two completely different things. You would think normally that these tenets, a fellow would dream up these tenets, he'd live by them. Well, boy, that would certainly be a straitjacket, wouldn't it? How in the name of common sense could you manage that? You not only talk about this stuff all the time and write about it all the time, you live it too. Nuh-uh. No randomity. That would find you in a static putter. And therefore, people not knowing what I really think very often get kind of nervous. Because, look, if you can think of things as powerful as this, what if you really thought something else? What if I were really an anarchist and believed in anarchy? Or what if this or that and so forth? This would be nervous, wouldn't it? I mean, it would be no good at all. Well, unfortunately, for such a theory, basically, I'm just a good engineer. I mean, by that, when I say a good engineer to me is one who considers a pint as a drink, and who considers a stay in town should be an interesting stay, who thinks action is highly desirable, and who would rather see the road built than not built. And that's all. It's my philosophy, it's so backwards because I work on an action philosophy. All my real desires in existence are in the direction of action, not thought at all. So we're dealing with almost continually a dichotomy of thought and action, as far as I'm concerned, in trying to live in my own life. Well, this becomes very interesting. Because what I'm evidently teaching is confused in people's minds with the most inactive thing there is, Hindu philosophy. Boy, if you want no motion. When I was a young boy, I used to just think this is the most wonderful thing in the world. How can anybody sit still that long? That's just impossible. No, I used to just go around and ache. I mean, I know some fellow who was doing something. You just haven't any idea of this. I mean, the stillness with which one of these characters could sit. I'd watch him for just a few minutes. And I'd get more nervous. And I would go back and go down to the river's edge or something like that and run up and down to the sand or pitch stones at the local idol, anything, but no motion of that degree. Your Hindu is just a marvel at no motion. Oh, and he's also a marvel at no action. And he's also marvelous at this. There's hardly anything he hasn't dug up about the human mind and then told you about exactly backwards. You could almost turn it upside down as a philosophy and have a complete philosophy. He's never evaluated his data. Therefore, I have to kind of step sideways and be very careful not to talk in anything anybody could mistake for mystic terms. Because a guy could sink himself by picking up mysticism and taking its data and thinking it combined with the data of Dianetics. It won't combine because it's 180 degree polarity difference in many of its data, and it's not evaluated. I call your attention to the fact that we recently dug up six body entities and the Thetan. Last night I was opening a book on the chakra. There are seven chakras, and six of them are located in the body, and the seventh is the crown chakra. And they're very beautiful, they're very pretty, and it's a wonderful philosophy. Amongst other things, it says, the crown chakra, it says, man is a mind that owns a body. He is not a body. It says that right there. It was said by a fellow in 1639, I think, by the name of Getchell. It's been around as a datum that long. And then what do you know? It says, of the seven, the last one, which is freed, is the crown chakra.
Oh, no.
If you tried to free all of the entities of the body without freeing the Thetan, you would have the Thetan so re-stimulated and with so much energy in his vicinity, loose energy that he couldn't handle, because at the same time this is supposed to be done with the Hindu philosophy of neglect and denial. Negation against force.
That the guy would never get out of his body.
It is a perfect blueprint as how not to theta clear. And yet it says right there, man is a mind who owns a body. That's fascinating. When I was a kid, I used to stand around with my mouth open on some of these things, just utterly fascinated. How could they be so right and so wrong at the same time? Now, this stuff looks particularly good if you know about energy. Boy, does it look good if you know about energy. You just read about energy into it. And it's just wonderful. You say, well, I had all the data's right there. All the data except data about energy. And everything we're doing now is based on knowledge of energy. But somebody should have done it. It's impossible that this datum could have been around for 400 years in circulation in European civilizations and known for 400 years with people experimenting in mysticism and the field of the mind and so forth without somebody saying, they say 50 million monkeys sitting down to 50 million typewriters would write in 50 million years all the books there were that have ever been written just by accidental combination. Well, damn it, nobody ever said, they said, send your soul to, they said, astral walk to, see yourself go, they said that, nobody ever said, step a foot back of your head. That's impossible. In 400 years, somebody must have said, step a foot back of your head. And obviously, nobody ever did. Obviously. Because I have been around mystics since time immemorial. I know mysticism. I'm a good mystic. Formal and informal mysticism. I never ran into it, even vaguely. And I never ran into anything like faith clearing. And yet hear all your answers. Now this tells you something. This tells you that your pre-clear, if he's been involved with mysticism, is on a 180 degree different vector in many quarters, and you're going to have an awful time with him if he's founded firmly in mysticism and not in anything else, and doesn't have it tied in any way to anything else or any other frame of reference. You're going to have trouble. Because the fellow is going on data he thinks he knows, and data he thinks will combine with what you're doing. And it won't. That's what's fantastic about it. Here are two vases which contain practically identical contents that will blow each other up. You can blow mysticism higher than a kite by pouring Dianetics into it. You can blow Dianetics higher than a kite by pouring mysticism into it. And yet the data in it is terrifically similar. It's fabulous. I never could have done anything, really, unless I'd known something about mysticism. Unless I'd had a pretty good idea what mysticism was all about. But you see, I did something about when I was about 18. I took everything I knew about mysticism, and I very carefully put it in a hypothetical bag, and I lowered it into a hypothetical river and let it flow down a hypothetical, non-existent, and never-to-be-recovered time stream. And kissed it goodbye. Because I found out something. I'd found out that although I had native abilities in clairvoyance, poltergeist, other things, that when I tried to practice these and improve them, they folded up on me. So I said, this line's booby-trapped, boys. Either on purpose or out of stupidity, it's booby-trapped. And that's why you don't want anything to do with it. It's booby-trapped. It's just like walking into a town just after the enemy left. Don't touch nothing. Leave it alone. Poltergeist. Take a match. Put it in a bowl of water. If you concentrate hard enough on that match, do you know what'll happen? That match can actually be pushed to the other side of the bowl of water without you breathing on it. You can even protect your nose from it so you won't get any air on it. You can actually push that match to the other side of that bowl of water if you work on it. That's poltergeist. Wonderful. Nothing wrong with it at all. Except that it's the wrong way to do it. You, the other night, were throwing your eyes out of focus, and they were just going haywire on you when you were pouring energy out through the optic nerve. That is not where Thetan energy belongs. It doesn't belong going out through an optic nerve. And if you pour very much Thetan energy out through an optic nerve, it'll shatter your sight. So of course it gets worse, and you get worse, and you get worse, and all of a sudden one day the match won't move. You say to somebody, well, I know that. All right, now let's take a stupid stunt like throwing out a whole block of energy past a lot of ridges. You sit in your head and throw out a blast of energy out from the center of your head into the next room and read a book that is in a library shelf. You used to be able to do this when I was a kid. Oh, I just shocked people most horribly. Boy, it was wonderful. It was wonderful to sort of wave your hand in thin air like that and have things happen that left people really not quite sure whether or not you were human or not. Of course, the joke was on them. I was never human. But I used to look into the next room, and read the cover on a book. And one day I had a horrible headache right after I tried this, and I couldn't do it anymore. Why? Well, you look out from the center of your head, you're throwing an energy and perception beam into the next room, and it goes past a ridge, and it excites the ridge, and it blows the ridge up. And then you don't know it's a ridge, and you don't handle that energy, and it goes kaboom, and you go into apathy on the subject. In other words, just try and practice these things. Now take clairvoyance. Instead of actually knowing you can go up the time track, you can go up the time track and look all around. You can build a time track. You can do anything about time tracks that you want to do. As far as reading this mess time track is concerned, if you want to waste time doing that, you can do that too. Of course, you've got to build a future on it in order for it to have a future. But you can do that and make it then live along to its own future. Sure spoils your randomity when you do that, though. You say, I'm going up to the corner, and then you go up to the corner. You're really building a time track, and you do just that. All right? Look at that. Look at that, though. Clairvoyance. Now we'll sit and concentrate in an hypnotic trance, having looked at a candle fixedly for a number of hours, and then we'd be able to read the time track. Well, nuts, you don't want yourself in a dazed condition to go wandering around as a Thetan? No. Boy, can you get into trouble. Now, very often, a guy will do astral walking and accidentally get out of the body himself and not know quite what he's doing, and he'll get some sort of a start, and he'll go into the body, and after that, he can't even astral walk. Gee, you talk about a booby-trapped town. mysticism is full of booby traps. And you're going to have to solve them just as though a person had once been a theta clear and then done everything wrong. He had ridges blow up and everything. Don't think that special conditions are entered by his having practiced in this field. But you just figure out everything that could have been done wrong in theta clearing and then test them to see if that's there. Let's take a blowing ridge. Let's get a blown ridge. All right? Say to the fellow, did you ever have a shooting pain in your head and so on while you were worrying or thinking about this, that, with regard to mysticism? He may say yes. You're working with a case that has a blown ridge and has been blown on that subject ever since. Do you have, do you ever used to concentrate or go through any such exercises? If he did, you've got a no motion, no force area because mysticism taught him to do this. It taught him to deny force. And here's the point which all this long-winded dissertation leads up to. Is it's a philosophy of existence, which was evidently entered upon a long time ago, with the right dope. And then somebody booby-trapped the line thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago in India. Somebody booby-trapped it. Nobody's going to get out. Not that line. Because, look here, get this wonderful, wonderful device. You deny mess and deny force. And if you deny mess and deny force very long, it'll swamp you. And if it swamps you, you won't be able to get out of your head. 180 degrees wrong. You've got to deny ownership of anything. You can't have anything. You don't do anything. You, nothing. And you just negate against force, negate against force. You don't kill bugs. You don't do this. You don't do that. No, 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 no. The second you do that, you cut out of dynamics 1 to 8 any force. The second you start to practice it, your perceptions will turn off. Boom. Your ability to locate yourself in time and space will turn off. Boom. You deny, deny, deny. That's half the flow, you see. Deny, deny, deny. And so you've got a one-way stuck flow after a while. You've got to have it both ways. Because full responsibility is necessary to a full theta clearing. And full responsibility would require, theoretically, a full use of force. And so if you booby-trapped it the other way, it wouldn't work. Now let's just take have. Have. Have is how you make time. A workable philosophy is create, 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 and then create. And either with time, by just throwing it in time streams, or in other fashion, destroy. If it gets in your road, with destroying it by time, or destroy it by giving it away. To anybody that's foolish enough to have it. Because if you run the cycle, create, have, you now have time. You now have an inexorable time if you create and then have. So you see what's wrong with have. Have creates time. So if you have and have and have and acquire and acquire and acquire and acquire, time burden becomes more and more and more onerous. And your ability will get less and less and less and less. Possession is the way you pin people down. If you give them enough possessions, you fix them. You really fix them. The way to ruin somebody would be to give them $1 million. That is ruining. Right now, there's a government on the face of the earth which is making the principle of giving everybody money. And I'll be a son of a gun if people don't take it. It's a sure way to ruin. To have. A dependency. It's ruinous. Because the only way to have is to create and then not have. Just create and not have, create and not have, create and not have, will put you in full command of time and make you cause without ever getting an effect. And the magician wanted this answer. Oh my God, how he wanted that answer. And there it is. If you create, 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 you never violate the second law of magic. Do not be hoist by your own petard. Do not be an effect to your own cause. The only way you can be an effect to your own cause is to keep moving up the time stream and acting after you've postulated. So you want it, if you can get it on the level of create, 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 and you never have. You haven't got time. So how do you avoid this? Never borrow any money from a bank. Make it. Never accept a gift. Make it. Dealing in the messed universe, you can shilly-shally around and monkey around a little bit. If you want to, shift possessions around. Don't take them very seriously. Now, actually, the kindest favor you can do for a pre-clear is to take a good big fee from him. You've made it that much more possible for him to be free. Because he wasn't able to be free because he has, you see. Now, that's the philosophy, and that's what have is. And there's why have not, have not, in brackets as a dichotomy, why have and have not are so terrifically workable on somatics and on everything else, because it takes the time out of them. Now, continuing on this responsibility, if you have then achieved with your pre-clear full command over force, you have only then achieved full responsibility. So what is full responsibility? It would be full command over force, not full employment of force. That's something else. Full employment of force would be an abandonment of every ethic, because an ethic is essentially a proper estimation of force. You could say a culture, a society, depends for its rationality, and so does every individual, on a proper estimation of force. Therefore, behind force, you have much more powerfully that which estimates force, and that is reason in the messed universe. Now, when you're doing things with illusions, you're actually doing things with time, space, and energy, force. When you're doing things to delusions, you are doing things with time, space, and energy. When you're dealing with the messed universe, you are dealing with a peculiar case of time, space, and energy. Now, a person should be able to do a great deal of thinking about this, but we have action as primary. The reason why action is primary is because thinking can be down-tone scale from action. Rehabilitate action, then. Don't walk off from action. Just because you say Homo sapiens cannot use force. Force is no good. Force never solved anything for Homo sapiens. It solves things for a Thetan, though. Thetan's indestructible. He's in perfect condition to handle force. Actually, a Thetan who's in very good shape could flick his time and space so fast that no force could hit him. I don't care how fast the force was. No matter how fast that energy traveled, couldn't hit him. But if he puts a bulletin board up all the time and he says, "Here I am, hit me," i.e. a messed body, of course everything that walks will hit him. Now, having put up the bulletin board, he now has to invent ways and means of protecting the bulletin board. He never had to protect anything up to that point. So somebody must have convinced him he was in need of protection from force. Now, location in time and space requires communication with the time and space. Am I right? All right. Let's get clearing now by communication. Have the Thetan, this would be way down the list, by the way, this would probably be 3 or 4 or 5, and would be most useful probably in the band of 5. Have the Thetan perceive via messed body channels whatever he is able to perceive via messed body channels, and then coax him, while still inside the head, to perceive on direct Thetan channels all within the body. Now, his most acute perception area, of course, is the interior, immediate exterior of the body. So let's have him perceive, let's have him take communication within the body itself with a MEST method, and then duplicate it, theta method, until it is just as sharp with the theta method as it was with the MEST method. All right, let's get an example. Let's take the tongue, have the preclear take the tongue, and run it around these teeth. And now let's have him, he gets a feeling, see? Ooh, terrific feeling. Let's just take the running into the object feeling, much less the dampness and the taste and the other thing, but just that. You'll say, all right, now produce that sensation theta-wise. Directly. Inside the body. And if you worked with him, theoretically, he would be able to do so. And all of a sudden, he'll be able to get an emanation, pick up an emanation off the teeth, or get an emanation to the teeth and back again, or pervade the teeth in such a way as to do that. And he'll find this out almost immediately. But the reason mess perception is so easy is because it limits time and space by hitting matter against matter. Sight is the only peculiar one. The rest of them are awfully easy. He'll find out that the reason he perceives, what he's perceiving with his tongue against his teeth, is an object hitting an object. And he'll find that when he tries to perceive it theta-wise, that he isn't hitting the object teeth with an object, a theta. So it'll be an entirely different perception, and he'll find out that the theta perceives differently, and that the perceptions are a little different. They aren't all bogged down with a mess perception, and therefore aren't quite as certain to him in a state of uncertainty. Now, theoretically, you could simply go ahead down the whole category of communications and work out perception within and immediately outside the body. And then you could practice on getting him to produce action with the body directly, such as get outside and move the body's hand from outside with some tractor beams and so on. Because he's able to move this body, everybody agrees that one can move one's own body. So he's in a good agreement there, and he's not violating any laws or property of any kind. His property, he figures. And so, of course, he's able to do that. He doesn't come up against a bunch of postulates and a bunch of agreements saying, if you stay out of my body, I'll stay out of your body. And a bunch of stuff like that. Or everybody knows we can't move matches unless we pick them up. So therefore, communication, perceptions, in other words, within the body itself, as a practice, should spring somebody. Because what do you find wrong with the five? You find their level of reality is bad, and you find their ability to perceive is horrible. And right away, you ask them to locate themselves outside of a body they don't even know they're in, and perceive directly all this mess universe, which everybody knows is in a continual state of explosion. And they're not going to have anything to do with either one, unless you run an awful lot of reasons why. Now, the two reasons you might work with this therapy, you would run responsibility. You'd run continual responsibility, that is to say, delegation responsibility, them delegating responsibility, force, until you handle enough force so that they at length will all of a sudden realize that they're handing force to the body all the time, and the body's using it back on them again. And they'll say, oh, no. No. Well, they should run into this, by the way, directly if they just start perceiving inside the body. They'll find out this body is just sawdust. I mean, that's no... It's inanimate. The GE can do nothing with the body. The GE has been in such horrible state so darn long that when it comes to moting around and actually doing things with this body, he could maybe make it hang by one hand and scratch itself. But that was about where his command of a body ceased on the line, if that theory is correct. All right. Clearing by communication would then indicate that you would take all the various perceptions, not just look, but you would do what he could do with the perception within the body, and then make him do it theta-wise. Now, probably a lot of combinations could be worked out of that. A lot of combinations. Let's make him feel the back of his own hand. Feel the back of his own hand with his fingers. And then he'll find out right away that he can tell the back of his own hand, but there was weight involved in the other. There's weight involved in this, and that factor is missing in theta perception. He'll find out the first thing about it. He'll be able to feel the back of his hand. He actually could feel the back of his hand from inside his body. He could get a perception of it, direct perception. Make him feel moisture. Then make him listen to the inside of the body. And boy, is it noisy. It's awfully noisy. He'll say, my God, what am I doing in this boiler factory? It's no wonder my sonic is off. The devil himself wouldn't listen to this very long. And so on. You could go down the line, and therefore you would have somebody. Now, what you're curing is his avoidance of energy. What you're curing is his refusal to take responsibility for areas in space or time. Or dynamics. You're curing this by making him communicate with them. That's why Technique 80 worked. All right. Now we have then a technique, don't we? We also have, when we talk about responsibility, we also have the fact that full responsibility would be full command of force. It would immediately follow that there would be no randomity. And so, one produces randomity by dropping areas for which he will take responsibility. In order to get action, he has to select out of space and time things for which he will refuse deliberately responsibility. You'll find back on the track that your preacher has done this, just that. Without any reason whatsoever, he has said, every vinegar works in England is my direct enemy. No reason behind this. You see, that's the beauty of sanity. You don't have to have reason. That, by the way, is why people have to grope so hard to find sanity. Because of all the sameness, there is no sameness. You see, there's a shadow of this in complete identification. Somebody starts disassociating. When you go way up tone scale, the fellow can differentiate. He knows why he is doing what he's doing. And then can do it with great differences. So with no reason at all, he doesn't have any action. He appreciates that what's wrong with him, not, I'm bored. No, he realizes that what he's lacking is action. He doesn't say, I'm bored. That would be a misunderstood thing to him. So I'd be quite precise about it. I'm lacking action. Let's look around the scene here and see if there's any area that I could refuse responsibility for, and thereby get action. He doesn't even have to say that to himself very long, because that's such an easy principle. And he says suddenly, well, let's see, I don't want to harm anybody particularly or get into any big fuss. I'll just choose out all the vinegar works in England as my enemies. Their area of randomity. Now, what do you have to do about this in order to fight these vinegar works? Don Quixote tilting with windmills is a wonderful example of it. Wonderful. He couldn't find any fair ladies to rescue from great giants, so he made some. He was going to be the noble knight and fight giants, but unfortunately there were no giants, so he made some. Probably the sanest character that ever moted was Don Quixote, by these standards. And what do you know? People, ever since Cervantes wrote that, have been reading it with great attention. Nearly everybody knows about this character. I wonder why. He isn't required reading in any of the psychology or psychiatry courses in any university in the world. Dostoevsky is. They make everybody read Crime and Punishment. Dostoevsky knew so much more about psychiatry than psychiatry that is wonderful. Crime and Punishment is required reading in every medical school that I ever heard of. And a lot of them I haven't heard of. Everyone that I have heard of, they know Crime and Punishment. They had to study it. But nobody ever asked them to read Don Quixote. In fact, I doubt any university professor ever laid down Don Quixote incomplete. They probably read some kind of a version of it or something in high school or somewhere. But I don't think anybody reads that book all the way through. You see, I had the book once, the Doré Illustrated Edition, and I had it complete. And up to the moment that book was placed in my hands, I had no idea that amongst all the tomes that tome, that one is the tomiest. It's thick. It's real thick, with real small print. Don Quixote goes on and on and on. You know, people have read that book all the way through. Even that. They don't read the Congressional Record. They don't read the Commons proceedings from end to end. I think a proofreader does. Well, now that's really sanity. Now, some dumb fool would think you had to stand around and wait until a giant walked up and hit you over the head for you to declare war on giants. Well, that's silly. That's very silly. All you have to do is say, a windmill is a giant. Now, let's see, that's identification. We'll immediately produce randomity. Anytime you get a identification, you've got randomity right now. The randomity of the psychotic, however, is not even vaguely under his control. So you take identification and you get randomity. The first identification that a thetan makes is theta's motion. He makes that, and thereafter he has action. Lots of it. Well, that's his first identification. If you want to undo your preclear completely and start him in at scratch again, simply undo that one. And of course, you just go, Lord knows where you'll be, but he'll be thinking over the whole thing. He probably could think of it for years. Unfortunately, maybe if he didn't know this principle, let's see, I have to identify myself as motion. Bing. He could also say, I'll have to identify myself as sauerkraut. In this society, he identifies himself without his own knowledge or consent as a mess body. Now, that's insanity. When you do identification without knowing you've done identification, you get an automatic state of happening. Well, you see how it's done. So any moment that you want randomity, you just say, I will refuse to take control of the force in that area. Now, this should tell you something else. It should tell you that you should be able to go through a business, left and right, through any industry, any business, any government, and find where the forces are separated. And be able to tell immediately where the turbulence is. You should be able to take a direct look at a government and say immediately, ho-ho, there's going to be a turbulent spot. And it will always be accompanied by this, a broken communication line. Pardon me, I say a broken line. I should say a jammed line, a glutted line, a cut line. There are five ways to cut communications. You put too much on the line, and that'll jam the line. Or you just simply cut the line and no communications flows on it. Or you simply put N theta on the line. And if you put enough N theta on the line, it will eventually cut itself. And so you get, see, the two other methods on the thing. Oh, yeah, you make the line not carry the information it's supposed to carry. It's actually a gradient scale. And you've got yourself a cut line. Well, you'll find something wrong with the communication line in any area where a person will not handle force. This tells you immediately that the first thing you'd find wrong with a thetan would be communications. That's what you'd perceive to be wrong with him. But what's actually wrong is he won't handle force. And so, he will automatically cut communications with any area that he is either, one, choosing for his own randomity, or two, that has been painful in the past. Two ways to rehabilitate that. They're very simple ways. One is by education and a gradient scale of connection, reconnect the line. And the other is to run out the incident or postulate, either by flows or rising scale, which created his idea about this thing. And there's a way to bypass the whole problem, and that's having to do mock-ups of it until he's gotten an idea that it's not so dangerous and wants to touch the real thing. Now, there's something else here. He's under no circumstances, under no circumstances, should you start stressing reality with a thetan. This is the most unimportant phase of his ability to contact reality. That is something like saying, the reason why little Johnny is sick is because he's in bed. You don't want, you don't have anything to do with this. His ability to perceive the messed universe, it is one of his least abilities. There's no causation there for a bad state of affairs. What's wrong with him is he has to perceive the messed universe because he can't make one. I mean, if you had him perceiving the messed universe gorgeously, beautifully, and he couldn't make his own universe, boy, would he be in bad shape. But the funny part of it is that condition won't exist. Unless he can make his own universe, he can't perceive the messed universe very well. He's just on a no-universe basis, because you're on the scale of beingness and willingness to handle energy, space, and time. It's much more important for a thetan to be able to make up his own time track than it is for him to take somebody else's time track. Because that's what's... You ever get anybody and you find out what's wrong with this person's kleptomania? He's so bad off that he can't even manufacture the faintest little erg of energy. He has to get anything he's got. He knows he can't make anything. He's in horrible shape. He has to steal everything. And that's kleptomania. If you want to know what's wrong with a capitalista, he doesn't dare let go of anything. He can't make anything. He knows that he's the most useless being in the society. He knows that. And he has to. He has to own and hold things because he has no other value. You object to a moneyed strata. You object to a moneyed strata of people being so unmannerly. For instance, supposing you've got the Russian aristocracy. They rode around being pulled by the Mujiks or something of the sort there at one time. They're having a wonderful time. Big arguments, like your southern planter in the United States was to some degree a capitalist. They used to have arguments in the United States. Does a Negro have a soul? And people would get very heated about this. They'd beat each other up over this one. It was one of the hottest areas of randomity there was. It's a discussion. Does a Negro have a soul or doesn't he have a soul? Be a son of a gun the other day with somebody here. I was discussing this point. And we were actually discussing this point all over again, but from a different angle. Is a Negro's time track the same as a white man's time track? There are three main races, so they have identical time tracks. Well, that's hardly the same argument. But the Russian nobleman used to sit around and wonder vaguely once in a while, between worrying about breeding horses and doing other important things, whether or not there was any human characteristic to be found in a peasant. And when you sold a piece of land, you might throw in a couple of extra people. The land was important, and the man went with the land. And sometimes he'd even neglect to say how many people went with this land. It was unimportant. You could always get people. Now, such people had paid absolutely no attention to an area And they'd said it has no power when it had enormous power. And one day it blew them up. Kaboom! Now, such people, by the way, adorn themselves quite ordinarily rather than have any of their own aesthetic characteristics. And that's what makes them disgusting. And that's all that your communist is really ever able to find out, to find really wrong, or you're with a capitalistic strata. The one thing that'll unsell it is the fellow will always buy the adornment rather than be an adornment. What a big difference. You, instead of being able to converse or walk nicely, it's a Cadillac car and a mink coat. I mean, the substitution. But what do you find? Every time you find big collections of mess, you find that someone is unwilling to put out to be. We'll get into this a little more deeply in just a moment, to have and to be. But there's the way your upper strata of a society, if it is doing a big holding operation, wrecks itself. It has instead of is. And there is the way your preclear's wrecking himself. He owns a body instead of being a thetan. On the delusion that the body is going to give him force. And he has a bypass circuit operating so that he gives the body all the force it has. Now, denying his own force and denying his own desire for force will be your two major computations to run in solving responsibility. You'll find the preclear quite ordinarily has used force and then said he didn't, and then used force and said he didn't, and used force and said he didn't as a continual pattern of living. The way he does this, he said, I didn't mean that. The hell he didn't. Okay? He says, I didn't say that. Or he says, I didn't act in that way, or something of the sort. He's denying force, denying force, denying force. You get him doing this very long, and he hasn't got any force, and you start telling him, move out of his body, and he says, I am a body. Naturally, everybody knows that. I'm a body. All right, when it comes then to randomity, the easiest way to pick up and select out, and what we consider to be the wisest way to take randomity, is with an ethic. You create an ethic. Very few people realize, however, that when you create an ethic, you create randomity. But in order to create a real good ethic, you've got to create the ethic down from the level of full command over force. Not up to it. Never try to hang up an ethic and then have people below the level of the ethic try to reach the ethic. They'll try a little bit. And it'll do some good, but they'll never reach that ethic, or even vaguely. Now, there's various ethical codes. An ethic really is different than a code. People can be beaten into being moral, but they can never be beaten into being ethical. Because an ethic requires a very good estimation of force. You have to be able to judge to be ethical. And one of the first things they tell a people that they only want to be moral, the first thing a ruler will tell a people that he only wants to be moral, is to tell them that they mustn't judge anything. And then he lays in a code of morals with a club. You see? And then he expects them to live up to it and punishes them if they don't. Now, an ethic is something else. You look in the dictionary, you'll find out it says ethic, and you look through the dictionary, it says morals. And you look up moral, and it says ethical. Fortunately, there are terrific paths to these words, enormous derivations, and ethic is one of the major concerns of philosophy. It is even a subdivision that they set up alongside of as a companion part of knowledge. That is to say, they set up epistemology here and they set up ethics over here. It's fascinating, but they try to make ethic is important as knowledge itself, whereas we find out that ethic and knowledge are very closely fitted together, many other things. Well, I'm going to read you an ethic. You've probably seen this. Self-determinism's basic intent, as it goes up the tone scale, could be said to be in the direction of a code. The unaberrated individual follows this code more or less instinctively. Every time it has been violated, it has been an aberration. And this tells you at once, gives you some kind of a measure of your aberration of the pre-clear, and at the same time provides an ethic code which could actually be lived up to. I'll read this very rapidly. One, never desert a comrade in need, in danger, or in trouble. Two, never withdraw allegiance once granted. Three, never desert a group to which you owe support. Four, never disparage yourself or minimize your strength or power. Five, never need praise or approval, never need sympathy. Six, never compromise with your own reality. Seven, never permit your affinity to be tampered with or alloyed. Eight, do not give or receive communication unless you desire it. Nine, your self-determinism and your honor are more important than your immediate life. 10, your integrity to yourself is more important than your body. 11, never regret yesterday. Life is in you today and tomorrow is made for you. 12, don't desire to be liked or admired. 13, don't be afraid to hurt someone else in a just cause. 14, be your own advisor, keep your own counsel, accept your own opinions. 15, be true to your own goals. The only way you can lose is to be dissuaded from carrying out your own goals. And that would be actually an ethic, because it works out in the field of reason rather than a code. But it, by the way, is a complete process in itself. I'm going to have some of these things mimeographed and handed around, because you can run these as dichotomies and unbury more stuff in a pre-clear, because that is basically same conduct. Shows you how far, though, a society normally is from that conduct. Society is way away from that conduct. It would be utterly impossible to be right and be a Homo sapiens. This is a complete impossibility. How wrong can you get? Man. Because man can't...